A few years ago, Jamie Salinas and I had this idea about doing a seance. We had some ideas what we wanted to do in a seance, but then after we had the idea, it's like, okay, well, obviously you have to find a venue. And rather than just doing it one time a year, the idea is, well, how can we find, you know, some place that we can host this for many times, perhaps throughout the year, but at least many times throughout the month of October. So we had some different ways of trying to approach it, some different suggestions of places that looked like that they might work. Jamie had been on some other ghost walks and some things like that. But before we kind of get into that, you know, it's what we're going to be talking about, I guess, on the agenda over here this evening. We're going to be talking about actually the marketing of a seance, not so much the tricks that you would do in a seance. And we had presented a more thorough lecture, actually, at the Mindvention a couple of years ago. And we've got a book we're working on. It's called Creating the Paranormal Experience. And so these are lecture notes from tonight that are actually a little bit more in-depth if you're interested in the notes and going more. These are some of the things that will be then later in the much, much larger book to come at some time.
Only four copies.
Yep.
$500 a piece. We're hoping to just sell one.
That's right. So from the agenda, from the standpoint of the different things we're going to be talking about, it's going to be, again, more on the marketing side, how to plan a seance, because there are things that you can do not just in the public forum like we do, but also to do this in people's homes and taking this into private settings and doing, and not necessarily trying to be a psychic or anything. We'll talk a little bit about that, a magician versus a psychic. There are a lot of different ways we can go with this lecture, and Jamie's going to kind of ask you guys what you want to do about that. Okay, if Jamie, we're going to get started over here. Then let me introduce Jamie. Go ahead.
Okay, question number one is how many people in this room, seriously, and please, I'm not going to be offended, if you ever thought about presenting like some kind of seance, a 30, 40 minute, 1 hour type thing, raise your hand. Have you ever thought about doing one of those? Okay, that's pretty much what I figured. Maybe one or two people. How many of you would like to do an occasional spooky, scary thing for maybe Halloween season? You're out camping with the kids. You're out of the cabin with some friends. It's dark. You've had a few drinks. Wouldn't it be neat to kind of pull out something kind of spooky? For those of you interested, raise your hands. If you're not interested, that's fine too. Okay.
What are we drinking?
JB and water.
Yeah.
See, I know that. Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Okay. So I wanted to kind of find out, you know, because I've got an outline of some stuff, and a lot of this, the outline here has the stuff that Scott and I put these notes together many, many years ago, like at least 4 or 5 years ago.
So, 2010.
Yeah, it seems like a long time. But anyway, I wanted to cover a few things, so I'm going to go through some things pretty quickly, and I'll ask Scott to jump in here at any moment. But the first thing is, let's define what a seance is, and that's what we do at the very beginning. The first thing I do is I explain, we're not going to sit in the dark. We're not going to sit around in a circle holding hands and singing hymns like what you see on a seance that's portrayed on movies. There are many different types of seances. The Fox sisters, many years ago in the 1800s, created a sensation when they began communicating with the dead by snapping their toes. That's how the story goes. There was a rapping sound. Is there a spirit here? Oh, did you hear that? There's a spirit here. And so later on it was discovered or came out that they were making noise with their toes.
Because their hands and arms were bound, and so they couldn't have made the noise themselves.
Right.
But they were, you know, making it with their
hands. And so they started becoming a sensation around parties. And, you know, back then there's no TV, no internet, you know. So what are we going to do?
Home entertainment.
This is fun, yeah. So anyway, they created a sensation with this, and spiritualism rose. And no matter what your religious beliefs are, either pro or against, we're not going to cover or go into that. But I want to set the expectations, because people come to the seances, they don't really know what's going to happen. I went to a seance with Scott. We went to the one in Galveston.
Right.
Only one I've ever been to.
Victorian.
Other than myself, yeah. And I thought, I had no idea what it was. I mean, it said seance, you know, the inner circle was $50 and the outer circle was $20. And, you know, I didn't want to sit in the inner circle, so I paid to sit on the outside. And what I thought it was a play. You had a medium, two mediums, people sitting around in a circle.
Dressed in character.
Dressed in character, that's right.
Victorian.
And they went all into, we're going to contact the spirits of the other side, and went into this whole thing. There was no tricks, per se, and it was all basically based on your mind. You know, some people do believe in seances, so I'm not saying they're either true or not, because, again, we're not touching on people's religious beliefs. So
it's just not the way that we present it. Ours is more of a theatrical presentation.
Yeah, whether if you believe or not, that's your own opinion. You have a question?
Yes, sir. When you went in, you thought it was a play. When you came out, what did you think it was?
Oh. Well, no. When I went in, it was only advertised as a seance. Once it started, I thought it was a play.
Okay.
Because these people were dressed in characters. They were,
right.
The medium went into a trance, and they're going. I mean, it was very, very much Hollywood looking. And so
it was very much like the, what did you think? Were they holding hands? They're in a big circle. There were 13 of them, you know, and the psychic had someone who was speaking through the psychic.
Right. You know, going to trance. There's a spirit here, a dark presence behind you. Man, you're concerned about something. That kind of thing. It was almost psychic/seancey. I was entertained. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
One of the ladies got scared, hyperventilated, and they called an ambulance.
And we thought that was part of the play.
One of the real guests.
Yes, we thought it was part of the play.
Yeah.
And they said, well, it's realistic. We actually have an ambulance that came out there. And then the police came. And then after the ambulance left, we asked the police, and they said, no, this was for real.
Yeah, and I thought, man, this is great. How can I hire an ambulance? I'm going to get Scott to have a heart attack.
Every show.
Yeah, you know. So I thought, man, this is awesome. But, yeah, that's what it turned out to be. So, anyway, I just want to tell you that quick story because it's going to lead into setting the story, and that's really what it amounts to. When Scott and I first started doing this, it was not good. We did bizarre tricks. I thought if I did a trick with a devil on it or some blood splatter or whatever, that was it. But really, the whole idea is a story. And so to set up the story, you know, when you watch a horror movie, what's the first thing that happens? The lights go out. It starts raining. Lightning, thunder, scary music. There's a noise down in the cellar. The young girl by herself is going to go down the cellar, right? You're setting the stage. It's spooky.
You set the expectation.
The cat jumps out.
That's right. The cat jumps out. The phone rings. Ring! You know, and everybody jumps. So that's the idea is what really works. Exactly.
Oh!
When you turn it off, and when you turn back on, now it's scarier. But anyway, so we started thinking about it. Scott and I talked. We would talk after every time and what's good and what's bad. And realistically, out of all these number of years, it's very simple. You got to set up something spooky. You got to create that environment. When you can sit around the campfire and tell ghost stories and everybody gets chills and you get the hair stands on your end on your arms and you hear about the monster. I wasn't planning on doing this, but I will tell you this. We have a family house in Waverly, Texas, very isolated, out in the woods. And I took a recorder and recorded Sasquatch sounds. I put it in the woods. I had a remote control that turns electricity on or off. Very low tech. It's a cassette player, Radio Shack. Push play, plugged in electricity. It's not going to work until I hit that remote. We're telling stories, and I say, hey, did you hear about the Sasquatch sighting around here? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm making, you know, setting the, building it up over time. And then when the moment was right, I hit play or hit power. And now there's sounds coming from the woods. There it is. So it scared the heck out of these kids. They were freaked out. And then one of my brother-in-laws banged on the metal shed and everybody jumped and screamed. And then we had a good laugh. So the point being is if you want to do this kind of stuff, set the mood. Set the expectations.
It's important, as Jamie said, that they first of all come in with expectations. Some people believe in seances. Some people have had a few drinks and they think, hey, this is going to be some fun. And so as some people go just, they like to be scared. And that's why the haunted houses or spook houses are popular because people like that scary. They know that, you know, these are just people jumping out of behind a closet or behind a door or something. And so this is a little bit different. They don't know what it's going to be, but they come with some expectation in wanting to be scared. I mean, that's why people go to horror movies and will buy tickets to, you know, some of these attractions in order to experience some fear, a little bit of adrenaline rush, if you will. And so that's one of the expectations. And also, again, some people, we learned early on, would come in with an expectation that perhaps we're going to be a psychic, and they've even asked, will I be able to contact my grandfather or my uncle or someone who has passed on? And so, you know, we have to say, well, it's not going to be that kind of thing. We don't want to give them any false expectations. And even afterwards, You know, they may say, can we talk with you about, you know, that kind of a thing. And so that's something that you need to set up and establish early on as well. First of all, knowing their expectations. Everybody has their own value system, if you will, their own belief system, that is, every one of us has a little bit of a unique twist, even though that we are of different faiths, that we have different levels of whatever that our belief systems might be. But that is to say that we learn early on to establish whether we are going to be a magician or a psychic or a medium, or exactly how we're going to be presenting ourselves.
And that's perfect transition, because that's bullet point number two.
I remember.
Which is, what is your persona? So I had to think about this. Am I a good enough actor where I can sit there and, I'm going into a trance and I'm speaking in tongues or whatever. And I thought, if I'm not really good of an actor, I'm going to look dumb. Like, for example, when I worked at Magic Island, you know, Roger Clouse said, take a look at yourself in the mirror. I wanted to be Vita Lupa. Am I slim, Ella, you know, graceful, you know, beautiful eye candy type magic? It's not me. So I have to understand what am I, you know, and I have to go with it. So am I going to become the medium? The answer for me was no. What I really liked was the ghost hunter type shows. I love to be scared. And I like the way, you know, and it's very popular at the time we started. So the Ghost Hunters on Sci-Fi Channel, Ghost Adventures, all that kind of stuff. So Scott and I basically turned into Ghost Hunters.
We were kind of questioning whether that these kinds of things really exist. And it's like, you know, we're wanting to explore this with you. You come in with your own belief system, and we're not questioning that. We're not skeptics. And so we just want to find out, are we really going to experience something here tonight together as a group, and let's just kind of see if something happens. You know, let's kind of ask if there's somebody out there. Is there something that's going to happen?
Yeah, so kind of basically to guide the evening. And we're like you. We want to find out, are there spirits here? Hey, can you communicate with us? We're going to use the same type of tools that you saw on TV. We're going to get you to do these things. And so that's kind of the feel and everything that we went with. But I'm going to kind of back up a little bit. One of the first experiences we had was a complaint. Not about how bad it was in the beginning, but the complaint was, I thought this was going to be real.
Yeah.
So, right away, on our website, theatrical recreation. That's very important. Legally, I think all the psychic hotlines, they have a big disclaimer on the bottom, entertainment purposes only. So, legally, we could have been sued if we were claiming to be speaking to the dead and spirits and stuff. So, we immediately added that theatrical recreation. So that pretty much covered it. However, you know, I'm a big fan of Banachek, and he's our friend. Banachek does a big disclaimer up front, and I don't like it. I think he should do a small disclaimer and let those that believe, believe. But I understand his situation, so I took that route with the seances. Very small disclaimer. Once you're there, it's real in your minds. I want to portray it as real, so if you believe, then you believe. If you're here to have fun, you're having a few drinks, and it's spooky fun night, that sounds good too.
Let me relate what Jamie's just saying right there to what some of you said you're interested in. That very few, if any, were interested in going to the degree we have of doing a seance. But for those people who want to just to add a few scary things or bizarre things or some psychic things to your show, or perhaps do something in a, like you said, around a campfire or something in a private group or something, that is something that you still need to establish when you're going into someone's home, that you're not coming in as the psychic necessarily. If you are, then you need to know your character. And so you need to go in character and stay in character, whatever that is. Some people, like Jamie, had been with this on a tour, walking tour with a lady who had an Indian guide who spoke through her, you know. And so if you have someone that does that, that's fine. You know, he's got a ventriloquist figure, you know, that a child has inhabited, you know, something. So, you know, have something that you know that you are presenting. So when you're going in to present this in a private home situation or around a campfire or something, if you're going to be a medium or something, you have to prove some sort of credentials, even if they're all made up. At least it's going to, you know, sound good.
And that moves into the waivers. There's a big discussion here recently. I posted something on Facebook the other night. I found some VIP tickets to Magic Island, posted it. It's a fun little memory thing. But one of the things I loved about Magic Island was when I was performing on stage,
curtains are closed. And Scott starts his intro. Our stars and our stage are truly international stars. And it's the buildup, the excitement. It's dark backstage. My name's about to be called out. The curtains are going to open up. People are going to yell and cheer. That anticipation was my favorite part of the show. Anticipation, going out. Once I did the first trick, I can relax and have fun. But that excitement, and that's what you have to get your people who are going to watch the bizarre trick you do, the scary story. You have to build that excitement. That so when they come to the Le Craft, it's built in the 1840s. It's spooky. It's dimly lit. It's old, creaky building. It has a haunted history. And it's just plain scary looking.
And that's one of the things, again, when we were seeking out a place, we went to the Rice Hotel downtown. We went to the Spaghetti Warehouse and to Le Craft. And I think you may have checked a couple of other places, too. All of those three places are listed in the record book of most haunted places in the state, and if not the country. Certainly Le Craft is. And for various reasons, we decided not to use the others and to stick just then with Le Craft. So people come in and know about the stories. And if they don't, then when I'm downstairs and I'm telling them a little bit about it, and it kind of starts to freak them out, and then some people get freaked out and they leave. And that's not what I'm going for. I want them to stay and go upstairs. Which is another thing, is that we want to keep them in that same mood. I learned very early on also during that first year we were doing this, that I shouldn't be performing magic, because when they go upstairs into the seance and Jamie starts doing all this other creepy stuff and different things are happening, they're going to say, you know, if that guy can change a 1 into 100 down there, said, you know, that they can do anything up here, you know, because they started to suspend their disbelief, I guess, at that point. So there is kind of a fine line. So the idea is I could still use an invisible deck, but I can put a completely different bizarre story around it with a skeleton hand or something, you know, that the hand of the spirit of this place is, you know, just making the car turn upside down, and it's more believable, and you get completely different reactions if you put something with a little bit of a bizarre twist to it than you do if it's more of a comical twist or whatever, because they're not laughing. It's more of a, wow, how that happened. I mean, you really got, if you've never tried to do any kind of a trick, stage or, you know, close-up or whatever, with some bizarre twist, I recommend that you try and do something very serious and you build a storyline around it. And I'm not talking about a storyline, you know, kind of like Kerry Pollack's Kate and Edith, you know, kind of a funny story like that. I'm talking about a storyline where you actually have a, again, you are building up the story about a spirit, a child, or something that has happened in this location, or that I, you know, you brought in something, which is another thing I guess we'll talk about later. You know, whenever you're performing in someone's home or you're doing something privately, you don't want to come in and then, do something with the spooks and then you leave. It's like, well, are you taking these guys with you or what? You know, you need to make sure that, look, I brought this haunted artifact in with me and I'll take it back out and cleanse the room so that way that no spirits are left behind, which goes back again to that waiver we'll get to in just a second. But I'm just saying that we learned that to help create the mood, because it's already there of this being a haunted place, but to continue put people more in the mood for the seance later, that's why during this first hour of Mix and Mingle that I try to get people into, give them a taste of something, what they can expect upstairs. This is something really unusual. Instead of using regular playing cards, I would use then tarot cards. Same card tricks, but just using tarot cards, and it makes a completely different outcome, and they appreciate it and understand it a lot differently.
At Le Craft, too, I was very impressed by their haunted lady on the stairs.
Yes.
Who wouldn't touch or push pretty girls
right.
as they
That's
went
right.
up. Not a girl walking up there is going to admit she wasn't touched or pushed.
That's right.
if the ghost only touches pretty girls.
The girls only touch pretty girls, they all get touched.
Oh, yeah. Did you feel it? Yes.
Of course they did.
That was a very good thing on their part.
Yeah.
I think you guys get the idea about setting the stage of taking advantage of the spooky situation, getting people in the mood before you just pull out something haunted. All right. So I'm going to tell you exactly what I'm currently doing now in the seance. It is a Jack the Ripper themed seance. So the first thing we're going to do is we do a brief little history about the location where we are. Scott does that, and then I move on to we're going to call it the cleansing of the area. Because if we're going to do a real ritual, then I have to sprinkle salt around the table. Salt is one of the Earth's basic elements, and for centuries it's been used as protection against evil spirits. Now, tonight we're going to try to contact some spirits. In fact, one of them is very, very nasty. His name is, well, he goes by Jack the Ripper. Very nasty individual, so we want to make sure we are protected. I will sprinkle some salt around the table, and I do that. I sprinkle salt. And then, new this year, I have a token that's been blessed. It is a medallion from Saint Benedict, who is the patron saint of exorcisms, and he protects against evil spirits. I put that on the table. Well, hey, I'm setting the mood.
Right.
Oh, this is creepy. We're gonna play with something we shouldn't play with, and I'm gonna try to protect us. So that's really what it is setting that anticipation, getting ready. You know, that kind of adrenaline rush that I was talking about with Magic Island.
And getting into that mood also, like Jamie said, whenever that the first few minutes that I'm actually giving history of the place, that's to build that up so I can pass it over to him. And I begin with just regular history. So people can say, oh, this is interesting. I didn't know that, and that this place was built around that time, and that Foley actually was a son-in-law, and that's how Foley's was developed, and one thing or another. So they learn history, and it's kind of like interesting thing. And then I say, and that's why that's on the historical record. But the reason it's on the haunted record is because of this. And then I tell them stories about why this place is haunted, different people who died and everything. And that's when it starts to get kind of creepy, and then we start to do something with some pendulums that we have given everybody when they come in. So that, again, it starts from something very pedestrian, then gets more serious, and then starts to, and on them, when Jamie starts putting the salt and everything around there, it's like, wow, this is really the real deal. And you got to put down that coin.
Right. Yes, sir.
I just want to make a comment or an addition to the setting the mood thing. I don't know how many of you got to see Jamie's show when he did the seance at the end about Houdini. To me, that was such a great setup that prior to that particular set, he was doing magic, that type of thing, very good comedy magic. And then all of a sudden, we went into the seance deal, but he had to set the mood up. And it was a long setup.
Two-minute introduction, yeah.
Yeah, it was an introduction into magic, mm-hmm. Houdini,
multimedia,
Magic Island, and it worked down into the seance of bringing Houdini back.
That's because he had to change the mood.
Right, he had to change the mood with the introduction, right. Or setting up the introduction and setting that
for the
mood
floating table.
And the music all added to it,
right.
Floating of the table, all that was just so
yeah,
perfect.
And the sand frame with the Houdini yep. appearance of the photograph and everything.
That actually was what got me into doing the full-blown seances.
That was so beautiful.
So now I've done the protection, I light the candle, and we begin. The first thing we're going to do is I'm going to hand out some cards. Would you write down the initials of someone who's living, a friend, someone who you know who's in good health? You do the same. Oh, you write down the name of the first name only. Only initials of the living. First name of someone that's crossed over. I'm going to do a living dead test. So I'm going to explain about how spirits communicate, blah, blah, blah. And this is not my trick to teach, so I'm, you know, we're not teaching the effects tonight. But I do Doc Hilford's living dead test. It is killer. Spectator finds the dead person's name with a pendulum. And I basically guide them to find the person. And the reveal is so simple because when I turn the cards over, the business cards, they have initials. So it's very obvious that person's living. Who wrote LB? Oh, that was you. I hand you the business card and say, tell LB I wish them well. Tell JR what a great time you had here at McGrath. So you're handing all these out. There's one that you found the energy is different. Now I say, don't turn it over yet. And then I reveal, without ever looking at it, you know, kind of spiritually who that person is. At that point, Scott can tell you, the room kind of goes, wait a minute, this might be real.
Right.
At that point, it changes. And that's when, to me, it becomes real.
And you can't rush an effect either. I think, if you're doing these in private parties, whenever you try to do this, as Scott Hollingsworth had mentioned, that you it took a couple of minutes for him to try to stop the laughter, if you will, and try to get this serious, say, look, we're going to do something completely different. And you got to have people's mindsets changed. And so you just can't, for example, even the haunted key, you can't go hold it in your hand and boom, it turns. You know, you're inviting spirits, you're asking them to come. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But eventually they will come if you just have some patience. And people are there, and so it's amazing when you're doing some of these things, like the haunted key, for an example, the attention and how long that it takes. I haven't ever timed it, but, you know, 60 seconds seems like an eternity, you know, when it's completely quiet and all eyes are focused just on that one key, and the slightest movement is enough to elicit gasps. So even something that would be as simple as that, when done in the right context, I think.
Yeah, I brought it. I'll do it, and I'll show you how I do it, so you'll get an idea. So now I've set that tone of, whoa, this might be real. Then I would say, but tonight we're not here to contact a friend or loved one. We're here to contact Jack the Ripper. Why Jack? Well, two of the main suspects, Aaron Kosminski and James Kelly, were the primary suspects. And James Kelly actually traveled to the United States. There is record of him landing in New York, and then shortly thereafter, Ripper-style slings on the island of New York. He traveled to Atlanta, more Ripper-style slings. He traveled to Galveston, Texas, again, Ripper-style slings. So it's quite possible that Jack himself traveled through this area, and since this building was open at that time, it is quite possible that Jack himself was a patron of this building. So, man, how creepy is that?
Yeah, because we've already built up the history. So, see, that's kind of a callback. Again, yeah. We talk about how old the building is, how long this has been around, how it's become established, and it was a watering hole. Sam Houston and others used to come and drink here. And so in 1892, when these Ripper-style slayings happened again in Galveston, it's entirely believable that they would have come through here, which would have been the main pub and stop along the way.
It's pretty far-fetched. But that's how I tie it all together, yes, sir.
Did that really happen, or did you make it up?
No,
that
it happened.
Is true. Okay. It is true.
Yeah, we've got newspaper clipping.
Yeah. Now, and then, so now I've established, so you just felt the willies over there, I saw it. And when she shook like that, if things happen, I make notion of that. Oh, you felt some motion over there. And then I say, did you feel something? Well, obviously, yeah, she might have felt her hand going to sleep or whatever. And, you know, but that's an open-ended question. So, and before she can answer... Yeah, before she can answer, I'll say the spirits are everywhere. They may touch you next.
And that's a good point.
Oh!
It's important
to set it up.
That as I'm setting this up, I'm telling everybody to be very alert on all of your five senses, because there may be something that you hear that someone else doesn't hear, and vice versa. And so sometimes things happen, like, you know, happened with Don Billings one time, in which that he set down a glass, you know, on the bar, and then when he reached back, it had actually moved on the bar. And it was, and he said he's not coming back. That freaked him out. And so there are stories like that of things and other things that happened to Jamie and me over the years, plus other stories that some of the other patrons have told us and told the bartenders, and kind of we pass these on. So we continue to start to create this mood, you know, then again. And so just as Jamie says that, you know, if something happens, then he'll pick up on that and then say, did you feel something? You know, that maybe someone else didn't see or hear.
Now, I bought this trick. This is a marketed effect. This is called Luna. It's a book test by a company called Outlaw Effects. This is a marketed effect. If you're interested in doing something spooky, I highly recommend you buy this. $65, $75, can't be more than $85. But what this is a nurse's registry of Colony Hatch. Colony Hatch is an insane asylum that was located just outside of Whitechapel. Wait a minute. Jack the Ripper was just outside of Whitechapel. Some of the suspects stayed at Colony Hatch. Here's my tie-in, Jack the Ripper. So Jack the Ripper is a very elusive character. He hid in the shadows. No one knows for sure, even to this day, who Jack was. So now I bring out the book, the registry, Colony Hatch. I'm a collector of haunted artifacts. This book has 500 patients. 500 patients, their information about treatments, their doctors, medication, all kinds of information. Now I have somebody pick a patient. Then I bring out a Ouija board. Now let's talk about the Ouija board.
I think it's kind of freaky.
Everyone Ouija board, by nature, as soon as I bring it out, half the people are going to go, oh, I don't like those. Those are truly evil. You know, that's your own belief. I mean, they sell them at Toys R Us. You know? So, but I like that fact. And I have another product from Outlaw Effects. I'm not their dealer or rep or anything. I don't make any money off of them. But I have a wooden board. I almost brought it. The other prop is from them as well. Ouija board with a drawer that has an electromagnet in it. It's triggered through a remote. So that's really creepy. So anyway, somebody has a book. They pick a patient. And I sit down the Ouija board and I ask for that spirit to join us. And then I come up with a number. Number three. I'm getting the presence of a woman. Does that make sense? And they say, yes. And then I say, then focus on their patient number. I get a number three. Is that not the first number, their patient number? Yes, it is. And I say, oh my God, I can feel how this lady feels. She's very sad.
oh, this woman is in deep depression. This is a sadness that I've never felt before. Wait a minute. Oh, her children. This was the first Andrea Yates. She murdered her own children in a postpartum depression. I see her. She's in her mid-40s. Yes, is that true? She's in her mid-40s. Focus on her name. M-A-R. Marion, Mary, something like that. Is that right? Yes, she's here. And I mean, how spooky is that? And it's basically a simple book test. And I'm not going to reveal the secret, but I can reveal the revelation using a Ouija board.
But you can see the way the prop is made also, and the presentation it puts around it. It's very creepy. Another thing, speaking of Jack the Ripper, that is a thing that's that they had for the Titanic. It was made, what was that called? The White Star. White Star. Yeah. And then they later came out then with the Jack the Ripper using the Ripper cart. And what's the name of the company that does that? That's not Outlaw Effects. That was...
I'll have to think about that.
It was in England. Iberia. New...
But anyway, I'm going to pass this around so if you guys want to look at this. This is the kind of stuff you need. Again, setting moods, setting expectations. You can make your own photographs. These are ladies, nurses from Colony Hatch. Found it on the internet, the picture, and I printed it myself. I aged it myself. I made it look like it was taped in a photo album. I gave it a nice crease. I wrote a year on the back, 1936, and one of these nurses, her name is Margaret. A lot of the story part is made up. And in the front of the book, it's signed by Margaret Williams, I believe is her last name, if I remember correctly, in the front. Doesn't matter. But anyway, so I'm giving this life. I'm giving this authenticity. So I actually made this myself on the back. It's an HP color photo paper. So I had to scratch it out. So that adds to the mystery. But anyway, pass that around too so you can look at it.
But arcane artifacts,
some things you can make.
Really help. Yeah, that you make something... or a lot of things that are already commercially available, if you can use them. It's just like whenever you have nice, shiny props on stage or something. This is just the opposite. I think you want to have something that looks like it. It's old, something, it's an antique, because as you know from horror movies or also from spook houses and different kinds of things, seems like that if they're an old product, that's exactly what it is that, you know, are infused with spirits that have long passed.
Like the doctor.
Oh, the doctor names, yeah. In the book, the doctor names are magician names. And so it helps me remember...
Dr. Corinda.
Dr. Corinda, Dr. Hanneman. That's right. There's the Earl is in there.
T.A. Dr. Waters.
T.A. Waters, yeah, Dr. Waters.
How did you age that? Call the Earl.
The photograph I aged with tea. The book actually comes aged already. And I added all the pencil notes that are in there. You'll get to see it. But here's another example. This is a fun key, haunted key. It's $6. Every magic shop sells these.
Or an antique store is probably a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely. And anyway, so you want to have some props. So find some stuff you like. See how you can tie it into your story. I mean, this fell in beautifully with this.
You give this to the...
to the spectator.
Yeah, the spectator takes that right. Right.
Well, these little further observation notes are wonderful.
Yeah. I mean...
Do not talk about children to the patient in room 425.
That's right. That's where the Andrea Yates tie-in. Now, let me explain. All the details that I provide for the person, whoever I reveal, are not all in that book. You know, it says she's sad when this is the sad patient. And I say deep depression... Then I go, oh my God, she murdered her children. This was the first Andrea Yates. She suffered from postpartum depression. They prescribed sedatives for them. Did they prescribe sedatives? And the answer is yes, because that's what ties in. All that other information is not in that book.
Those are just details you fill in to make it more believable.
Yeah, but by me creating that story, everybody else goes, wow, how does he know?
That's all in there? Yeah.
Yeah. So simple haunted key, and I'll use it later in... when we do performances, but the key, in this case, belonged to a lady that was murdered on the streets of Whitechapel. She may or may not have been a Ripper victim. There was only 5 victims that were truly tied to Jack himself. I'm going to place the key in my hand. I'm going to ask the spirit that owned the key to come forward. Spirits, if you are here, turn the key. Open the door to the other side. Unlock the veil of mystery. I can feel a little twitching in my hand, a little energy building up. Yes, it's moving. Open the door. Define gravity. Show us you are here. And then I immediately drop this on the table. Now, when I hand this out to people at the very beginning, feel it, feel the energy, how it, and I talk about Arthur C. Clarke, famous scientist. He said that ghosts might be leftover energy, residual energy that stick around tied to a place like Gettysburg, very famous for being haunted. And it plays over and over and over. So I get them to feel the key. Now, when after I do this, drop it on the table, feel it. How's the temperature? If she says warm, I say, yes, it's gotten hot. If she says it feels cold, yes, it's gotten colder.
And the energy has
so I don't care what she says.
There's a so temperature difference.
So, but I'm implying the change of temperature because the ghost touched it. And that simple trick, oh, as Scott said, everybody's staring intently like, you know, there's no strings, no wires, and it drops on the table and everybody examined it. So
it's one of those things I think is a throwaway for a lot of magicians. Think, oh, it's just a you know haunted key. It's very easy. People can figure out how it's done. But if you actually do it, not many people have seen that. And particularly if you do that in the context of a seance or something that's more bizarre type of unusual occurrence or something, that the reaction, again, will be pretty astounding.
Mm-hmm. The key is to do this slow. Slow as you can, the better. You know? And sometimes when it drops or when it falls completely over, I'll do this.
Yeah.
And let it hit the table. And then I'll say, pick up the key. And they go, oh, no, I don't want to touch it. They just saw me drop it like this.
Yeah.
And so it's, again, setting up those expectations. All right. So anyway, the point is, you can do some simple stuff. It's all about the story. How you sell it. How do you create the mood? Yes, sir.
Jamie, came out in the paper for real about 3 weeks ago.
Jack the Ripper?
Jack the Ripper came out with a forensic test of some sort.
Aaron Kosminski.
Prove who he was. Now, I didn't catch the name, but I don't know if that's the same name that you're using. Or
it is.
If that comes up, or...
Technically, James Kelly is the guy who came to the United States. Aaron Kosminski did not. At least there's no records of it. So I stick with the James Kelly. Aaron Kosminski was a hairdresser by trade. That's how they had him listed. Again, it's very important when you're doing your stories there that you know some real facts. So this is true stuff, so that's a good point. Because in the news it was Jack the Ripper has been discovered. This person who wrote a book is purporting that Jack the Ripper was Aaron Kosminski, a guy who stayed at, believe it or not, Collie Hatch, the Lunatic Asylum, the book that you have. So another tie-in. Now, this guy murdered his wife, very viciously. He was a crazy man to begin with. The way they're tying it in is the guy who wrote the book had a shawl, a scarf that belonged to a man that was found at a Ripper scene or a slaying. And he bought it through an auction kind of thing, and it bloodstained. And it has bloodstains from the last, or one of the
victims.
Ripper victims, and the DNA test, which he conducted to track to that person's ancestors, proved that it was her blood on it. There was also some semen on the scarf. And supposedly through DNA testing, he tracked that down to the ancestors of Aaron Kosminski. Now let's think about it. The scarf is over 100 years old. It's not been protected. People may have sneezed on it. People definitely have breathed on it. So is it contaminated? Probably. Is it beyond the shadow of a doubt it's his DNA? I don't think so. They don't really say exactly how it was a match. Maybe it was the same blood type. But the guy's selling books, and that's what he's trying to do. So it's interesting. Few headlines ran that Jack the Ripper has been discovered. But every so many years, somebody will claim, I know beyond the shadow of a doubt it was James Kelly. I know beyond the shadow of a doubt it was, who's the royalty guy, who King, one of the
Philip?
Prince.
King of England.
He was one of the princes.
It was the King of England.
Edward.
No, it was his son. It was Prince Edward. Prince Edward was a little off. You know, he was royalty, so sometimes there was some inbreeding going on. You know, this is serious. And so he never was in the public a lot, and some people say he was slightly retarded. So that's why they say it might be, you know, he was one of the victims, or one of, might be the But one of the suspect.
Takeaways also from what Jamie's saying is not, again, using Jack the Ripper as an example of knowing something about the Ripper and some of the potential suspects is that whoever or whatever that you use, you should know something about that because you could get busted. If you're going to be talking about Houdini and then you make up something, so, well, I saw on the movie the other night, you know, that such and such, well, I thought this was real. You know, that people tend to know more, they may know something about certain things that they can call you on it. Same thing like whenever I'm talking about the location of Le Carafe, whenever I'm starting to talk about, you know, certain historical things, I mentioned William H. Foley, who was a son-in-law, you know, and then in the Market Square and how it developed and all that kind of thing. There are people who really understand history, research history, and know that. And so they could say, well, I thought such and such, and that they might, again, bust you on. So you really need to do your homework on whatever or whoever that is. So that if you have a prop or a person that you're trying to talk about to bring their spirit back, if it's someone who is in the public eye, that's somebody that you should, again, have done your research on.
The last thing I wanted to talk to you about is overdoing effects.
Yeah, good point.
All right. How many people have ever heard of or know what a spirit bell is?
Spirit bell? Oh, yes. Everybody's heard of spirit bell.
All right.
Have you ever seen one? No? Okay.
This is my favorite spirit bell because it's assembled by the audience. It is ungimmicked. No threads, no wires, no... what else? Well, there's a magnet. Say the M word. All right. So it's assembled by the spectator. It's a simple stand and a little holder, and the bell is hung like this, placed on the box. Well, this box has an electromagnet inside the lid. It is beautifully made. I mean, it looks like it's an antique piece of history that would be found in a barn. It smells. It looks the part. On the back, there's a magnet. When I take the magnet off, the unit is on. When I put the magnet back on, the unit turns off. So there's no external switches.
So you don't explain this to the audience.
No. This is not there. No. The bottom of the box, there are some screws, and the bottom comes out. There's a false bottom. There's some batteries in there. There's a capacitor. It charges up and a wireless receiver. So it's a pretty sophisticated piece of equipment. So saying all that, I love this James Bond stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
No, I mean, we're all magicians. Don't we love the gadgets and all the pin reels and all that? I mean, it's all great. So when I found out, take this magnet off, remote control. Oh, I can ring this bell. Guess what? I'm going to ring this all night. Don't do that. Ring it once or twice. You can overdo it. Because then if I'm going to use this as a... Or is there a spirit here? Or ring once for yes. Ah, are you a man? Oh, two rings, it's a woman. You know, that's a no answer. I mean, after a while, it's not novel. It's not, you know, you've overused
it. Just like with horror films. I believe it was Jaws that Steven Spielberg had found that you need to seem to have one big scare. When that shark comes out of the water that one time, everybody jumps in their seats. But, you know, today in a lot of other horror movies, it seems like, don't go out there, don't go look behind the door. It seems like about every 15 minutes or less that you got a half dozen different scary things, and you become desensitized to it. That's exactly what Jamie's saying, is that if after a while it's like, well, it's going to ring again. You know, you're calling on the train monkey.
Okay, how do I put this in my Jack the Ripper seance? Mary Jane Kelly was the last Ripper victim. She was murdered in her own home, her own apartment. She made her living by walking the streets. She was a streetwalker, a prostitute. She had a young girl, and she supported her by being a lady of the evening. And outside of her door, she would have a little bell. When a customer would show up, they would ring the bell. And that's when she knew she had a customer. She would prepare herself for her deeds of the evening. Gentlemen would sit there in the parlor, and she would join him, lock the door, remove the bell, so that the customers knew she was busy. She would take care of business. One night, the bell rang. The man came in with a cloak, hat, dark figure. This time, the bell never rang again. Now, Mary Jane Kelly was the one that was most viciously murdered. Disemboweled, her liver was removed, half of it was sent to the Metropolitan Police Department. he reportedly ate the other half of the liver. So, I mean, this is not a good man. See, I gave you the willies, and that's the whole idea. So I told you all this. I brought the bell out. And then later on, I'm going to ask, Jack, if you're here, ring the bell. Guess what? Nothing happens. Nothing. And then at the very end, when all hell starts breaking loose, then the bell rings. Then it's like, Jack is here now. Now things are, hey, we got to stop this. So that's, again, the build up, the anticipation. So how cool this is. Don't overuse it. Telekinetic timber, I use that as a physical manifestation. A block of wood from Collie Hatch. Collie Hatch suffered a fire. Very true. People died there. Can you imagine being a mental patient locked in your room and there's a fire? No way to get out. Burned alive. There was a cemetery on site with over 5,000 patients actually buried on the premises. I mean, this is not a nice place. Here's a block of wood taken from that place. Arthur C. Clarke, famous scientist, said, energy sticks around buildings, places where tragedy occurred. This block of wood holds energy. Hold it, pass it around. Later on, that block of wood's going to fall by itself. Pretty damn creepy.
And that goes into low-tech versus high-tech. You know, as many hundreds of dollars as something like this would cost, a piece of thread is a whole lot cheaper. And sometimes can be just as creepy, particularly if you don't play it up as being too big. Here, there's a lot of emphasis on something happening. And let's say that we're looking at this and everybody's watching the bell, or you're watching even the waiting for the key. But if all of a sudden something falls, you know, in another part of the room and you hear a crash or something, which can be facilitated with just a piece of thread easily enough.
And we do that. We use the thread.
That's right. That by doing that, then, you know, the Jamie was kind of look around but not draw attention. You know, saying, do you hear that? Do you hear that? Or whatever. And then, you know, because all the attention is still over here. In other words, something is happening in this area. And it's away from us, you know.
Yeah, for us, the physical manifestations start with something falling in the back. And that's a string that runs all the way length to the bar. And Scott just pulls it and there's, and everybody turns, who's there? Is anybody there? Now everybody's like, oh, you know, what's going on? Then the wood falls, you know. Then the bell rings, you know, all that kind of stuff. I have a doll's hand. This is not completed yet. Basically, I want to attach a piece of doll material and, you know, like
lace,
it was ripped off.
Doily or something.
Yeah, but the story here is a little child that was killed tragically, run over by a car, killed in a fire, whatever you want to say. And then later on, oh man, at the right moment, that's gonna make you wet your pants.
Yeah. Hence the waiver.
You know, right? Hence Judy leaving the room right now.
Intervention.
Right. So you guys get the idea. I know you're probably not planning on performing a seance because it took us 7 years to get us to making decent money. It's fun. We make some money. We're not rich. We're 100 heirs.
But there are very few people around the whole U.S. who actually do seances, if not really the whole world. I mean, and most of them happen again during the month of October, or they may just hold one, like a Houdini seance or something.
Right.
You know that one that Lindy and I went to, one of them that, even though it was a small thing, when you had the woman up there, and she felt like somebody touched her.
Right. Right.
She was still freaking out going out down the stairs.
Exactly.
Right.
That's the point. We want everybody freaked out.
Right.
Don freaked out, right, Don? Well, Don, he's kind of, that night you were freaked out.
People come again with expectations, and we want them to leave in with something that is more of a belief.
You had that one couple when I was there once. She was a believer walking in the door.
Right.
He was not. When they left, he wasn't so damn sure.
Right.
There you go. Right.
Now, as he was sitting there, he said, something just touched me.
Yeah. Right.
I went, we brought a friend, Anthea, and she got touched.
Right. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, she still talks about it, you know.
Yeah,
they swear it's real.
Well, again, I like Banachek's PK touches. You know, I'm a big fan of Banachek. He's a friend. And I thought, how do I put PK touches into this seance? Well, remember Mary Jane Kelly, the one who made money for her daughter? Well, Jack actually ripped her daughter's doll, even disemboweled the doll. Now, while this is not Mary Jane Kelly's daughter's doll, we're going to use this to entice Jack to join us.
Now I've got a doll. I touch the doll and they feel it. That's pretty damn creepy. Mm-hmm. So again, it's how do I tie it into my story and fit it all, make it all full circle.
And it also has to do with routining. There are lesser effects building up to bigger effects. And that doesn't mean, like in that case, it doesn't cost anything to do the PK touches. Whereas something, you know, with electromagnetic does cost more. But you're building up to larger effects because a little at a time you start to eat away at their belief system as to what, like you said then, Angus, that, you know, this guy came in with no belief at all, thought it was all BS at the end. He kind of questioned it. And so that's kind of where you want to lead it. Don't want to start with PK touches. You kind of want to lead up to something like that. So it's just like with any other magic show. You have these peaks and valleys. Well, not valleys. You have some going up the side of the mountain and plateaus, and then move up to another one. You have to have something where people have a chance to relax and take a breath. And let me also point out, I feel that we fail if we get applause. Because then, oh, it's a show. You know, this is nice. You know, and we say it's a theatrical representation of a turn of the century seance, but we don't want people to applaud. We intentionally don't have anything that is built up for laughter. Occasionally, there are some moments of release that Jamie will say something, and there'll be some giggles or something that they might say. But they are scripted in there. So I'm saying that whenever that you're building your routine, keep that in mind. If you want to make it more believable, it should be very serious.
Right, because I mean, after all, I'm not a medium; I'm a large. See, and that's what I do. You know, how many people have experienced something paranormal firsthand? Please raise your hand. Please do that seriously. Oh. Okay, how many people believe it's possible, but you'd like to see it firsthand? Raise your hand. Okay. How many of you would rather be downstairs behind a bar? Raise your hand. You know,
experiencing those spirits.
Those spirits, right. So then that gets the comic relief. But what I'm looking for is the person who is going to get the willies when I do the touches and whatever else.
There's a beautiful little spirit box that's easy to build in Ted Annemann's book, Practical Mental Effects.
Yes.
And it's a nice little box about so big and little things happen, and that might fit it well.
I mean, absolutely.
We go to different spook shows and things like that. What was that convention we went to over in Beaumont at that time?
Well, that's the other thing. Is if you're going to portray yourself as a ghost hunter, guess what? I've been on a ghost hunt, so has Scott.
Yeah.
We have gone to ghost conventions.
And overnight spent the night where they got all the equipment and they got the, you know, spooky
place. We have EMF meters. I've walked around with these people asking with the audio recorders. I have a picture of me. With a FLIR device. It's a forward-looking infrared camera. Firefighters use these to find people in buildings because they can't see. And it works off of heat. And there's a picture of me sitting in a chair around 3 o'clock in the morning asleep. Imagine that. But there's a figure behind me. And they swear when they took that picture of me that no one was standing behind me.
Yeah, then on Facebook this week.
So I use it for advertising. I mean, look, there's me with a ghost behind me. I don't know if it was a ghost or not. You know, I was asleep. That's right. So the point is, you have to know your stuff. So we've gone to ghost hunts. We've gone to the ghost conventions. Ghost, you know, the ghost enthusiasts.
So you ain't afraid of no ghosts.
I have a lot of Ghostbuster T-shirts. It's one of my favorite movies. But there was something else I was going to say before we were done. Do we have any questions?
I think there was something I want to look through here, maybe. About the equipment we talked about.
Any questions? Nope. Okay.
How do you justify what you charge for your?
How do we justify it?
How do y'all?
Oh, well, that has to do again. If you do what we did, that is trying to find a location that you have to negotiate a financial arrangement with the place, and so we pay them per head. So. That's part of what we get out of that. So, I mean, we don't make it all. We add up however many people are there and then pay them, you know, so much per head, and then we get the rest on that we would split.
Here's a selling point. Hey, you know what? I came up to your bar, and it's Sunday night, and there's like 5 people here. What if I told you I can bring 30 to 50 people in to your bar and pay you $5 a head for each person? If you'll let me use the upstairs for
a couple
hours. And
they're going to be drinking for 2 hours.
That's right. And I'm going to keep them here for quite some time. Mm-hmm. They're like, wow, that sounds like a good idea. So that's how we sold it to the bar. And so that's really what we do, is we have that agreement. If we collect 20 people come in, I'm paying $5 a person. We have the hour meet and greet, and everybody
Don ordered wine. You and Lindy ordered wine. Everybody orders wine. They're spending money.
It's on Sunday night, again, when there's really not much else going on.
The second floor is closed. So it's a win-win for us.
Yeah. Did you find a way to use those Victorian coins I gave you guys?
Yes. Because it's a much longer presentation. What I do is, again, these are artifacts. I know what I was going to tell you. This leads right into this. Setting the expectations. I saw a hypnotist about a week ago, and if you've ever seen a hypnotist, they do this. They take out a piece of lemon, and they cut it, and they bite into it. I'm already getting sour feeling right now just thinking about it. And the juice is dripping and everything, and everybody nods is like, that's what you're doing, is you're setting up those feelings. So your point about your question again was
whether you use the coins.
The coins, yes. I will take someone, put them in a seat, and I'm going to say, who's sensitive, and I'm going to say, I want you to close your eyes. You're going to use your mind's eye. Basically, what I'm saying is you're going to use your imagination. You guys have not seen me do this. What I'll say is, you're going to close your eyes, take a deep breath in through the nose, slowly exhale out through the mouth. Semi-hypnotic stuff. Relax. You're feeling more and more relaxed. You'll find yourself a floating sensation, an out-of-body experience. You're going to find yourself lifting up higher and higher. You're no longer inside the building of the craft. You're looking down at the building. Now you're traveling higher and higher, and you're going to see the entire Earth. The Earth is going to spin backwards faster and faster and faster. You find yourself now, not in 2014, but in the late 1800s. You're going to slowly drift back down, but you're not going to find yourself in Houston. you're going to find yourself in Whitechapel. So anyway, you go through that whole thing, and now I'm setting them up for a little bit of hypnosis. Now, tell me, what do you see? I see women in dresses.
They create their own.
Yeah, and they're going to describe what they're going to see, and I'm going to say, now you find yourself on walking down a dark alleyway. There's a woman at the end, a lady of the evening. Don't worry, no harm will come to you. But what do you see? I just set her up, tell me that she's going to see Jack the Ripper kill somebody. And they do. They tell me that. So I portray it as, you have a gift. You have traveled back in time. You have seen things, you know. And then now that's a whole subliminal thing, you know, a little bit of hypnosis. So that's how you use the coins, is you put the coins in their hand. The coins are dated 18, whatever. You're going to find yourself at that time. So you give them hard artifacts to hold on to, and that's what they're going to focus on.
An anchor point.
Yes. And
whenever they say a date, then you can miscall that and hold them, you know.
Yeah, and I'm asking, what do you see? Tell me what you see. You know, don't worry, no harm's going to come to you. Do you see the man? If they don't say anything, do you see the man lurking in the dark shadows? Tell me about the man. I lead you into the story if they don't respond. But the problem is that takes 15, 20 minutes just to do that part of it.
Right.
Where there's no props. It's one person and their imagination, me leading them into that and everyone listening. That's it.
I've done that a couple times myself, and it's a unique situation. It's one of those things where you've done a lot of other things. They say, can you do one more thing? So, well, if you had some time, yes, we could do something. And it's going to be... And you've already created the expectation and the believability. So when you do that, by that point, they're all with you, you know, for the whole 10 or 12 minutes or however long it might take to go through this hypnosis type of thing. Don, did you have a question? You started to say something?
I just want to know, what do y'all charge to come to the show, and when is it exactly? What time?
$20.
They start October the 1st. It's on the website, HoustonSeance.com.
On Wednesday?
They're Wednesday nights and Sunday nights. And we skip a few dates. I'm in Las Vegas and I'm in D.C., and he's got a couple of things, so we've got a few dates that are missing in the middle of the month, but it's on the website on the dates. The last thing I wanted to say is, if you have any questions about doing this in a home, see me directly, because we've gone over time, but I do want to tell you quickly this. I did a seance at somebody's house, and it's not my idea. Doc Hilford. Doc Hilford is the master. I asked for a glass of water with ice. I took an ice cube. I went to the kitchen when nobody was looking, and I put the ice cube in the sink with some dishes on top. I went back, started the seance, and I'll be damned, when it was nice and quiet, is there a spirit here? Crash in the kitchen. The ice melted enough where a plate slid and made a loud noise in the sink. People just about fell out of their chairs at that point. Because now the spirits are here.
Yeah.
And all it was a cube of ice and the, you know, and lucky and luck.
I mentioned that we gave a much more lengthy presentation in our lecture, but a lot of those things are mentioned over here on Creating Paranormal Experience, which will be a more full-length book, but for $10 I brought a few of these for anybody who might be interested, because there are a couple of tricks that are explained in here then as well, a couple that we alluded to, as well as other kinds of things, how to find the place, how to market it, how to put butts in the seats, advertise, etc. Anyhow, I think I've answered questions. We've gone over time. Jamie, thank you very much. And thank you guys very much also for having this time.
If you would like to have a copy of the lecture notes referred to in this podcast that we call Creating the Paranormal Experience, be sure to visit the magic word shop. Just hit the tab over on the left side of the screen and you will be taken to the shop where you can order your copy of Creating the Paranormal Experience. This is filled with several ideas that are not only discussed during the course of our mini lecture that you heard here, but also teaches a few tricks and gives you some other pointers having to do with ghost hunter equipment that is a necessity if you're thinking about trying to present yourself in that type of character. Also, you can help support the Magic Word podcast by purchasing anything from the shop at the Magic Word. Until next time, this is Scotty out.